Welcome, everyone, to episode 171 of the NBA podcast. I'm Brian Toporek, and today we are going to start our division previews for the 2018-19 season. We are going to kick it off with the Pacific Division. Before we get underway, a reminder that you can follow us on Twitter at the NBA Pod. In our bio, you can find our Twitter handle, so give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes, so please subscribe, download, leave some five-star reviews. We'd love any feedback. And we're being hosted on the Almighty Baller Podcast Network, so check them out on Twitter at Almighty Casts. Joining me today, as always, is my very stable genius of a co-host, Morten Jensen. How's it going, Mort?
Brian, it's going really well because it's just so heartwarming to me to see Luol Deng end up in Minnesota because obviously, obviously that's going to happen. I mean, yep. Tibbs, Lou, Derek, Jimmy. Now we just need the whole Joakim Noah situation to get handled. He can go right to Mini, and we'll have the official Timberwolves. And I would actually email Adam Silver on a daily basis to have him, just for this year, rename the franchise Timberwolves.
Or, like, on their alternate jerseys, you could just have Timberwolves instead of Timberwolves.
I would love that. Oh, seriously, if they did that, they would just show how good sports they were. I would love that.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. And every Chicago fan would definitely buy a jersey. That'd be the best part.
Of course. I mean, would you buy anything with the Bulls are having right now? Like, no.
Yeah, you don't want a Zach LaVine jersey? I don't know why. It's weird.
Oh, God. No. I was happy, so shut the hell up, okay?
Well, we also have a special guest joining us today. Anthony Irwin, the deputy editor of Silver Screen and Roll, also the host of Locked On Lakers. Anthony, how's it going?
I'm about as good as Tibbs today. I don't know who's happier. Like, is it Laker fans or is it Tom Thibodeau? Like,
probably
Thibodeau just
Tibbs.
Wakes up, just he's just like laughing.
Yeah.
What's yeah, so funny? It's just life is great.
We need that meme of him just like cackling right about now.
Oh, that was the greatest Tibbs moment ever.
Yeah, it's. I'm very excited. I'm excited for you. I'm excited for, not for Wolves fans. I'm sorry for Wolves fans, but I'm excited for Tibbs. But, you know, we felt it necessary to bring a Lakers guy on for this episode in particular, obviously given all the offseason changes that went down. So we're going to lead off with the Lakers, Anthony. I think really the first place to start is, let's just
JaVale
talk
McGee.
About... What?
JaVale McGee. Has to be the where you start, right?
Oh,
at the
God.
Top.
Yeah.
Two-time NBA champion JaVale McGee.
That's right. True.
Sir.
We'll get to JaVale, but let's just start with talking about like the expectations for this team. Because obviously you get LeBron James, you've got all the young kids still, you have a bunch of these random free agents who we'll touch upon, but what do you think the reasonable ceiling for this team is? And then also the reasonable floor. Do you see a scenario in which they could miss the playoffs, or do you think they're like comfortably going to be in? It's just a question of like how far do they get?
So long as LeBron stays healthy, like if LeBron gets hurt, this team is a lottery bound team.
Yeah.
Right. And that it's a lottery bound team. I think they'll be mid to high lottery. I still trust a lot of the talent that they have on the team. From last year, Julius Randle is a loss, but I think they're deeper than they were last year. If LeBron stays healthy, though, I think their floor is the 8 seed. Their ceiling is the 3 seed. Their absolute highest ceiling. But I think they fall somewhere in the middle there. I think they'll be like a 5 or 6 seed, and then I like them in. You know, unfortunately, if they're a 5 or if they're a 6 seed, then they're probably going up against either Houston or Golden State fairly early on in the proceedings. Because I think OKC is going to come out and really run amok in terms of the regular season. They have a lot to prove this year. So I like the Lakers in just about any playoff series. But if they face either of those two teams, their playoff run is cut really short.
Yeah, so you think probably like second round appearance is best case realistic scenario?
Yeah, and really, I mean, for the Lakers, look, we joked a bunch at the beginning here about the Luol Deng waving thing. Their priorities are very obviously next season and moving forward, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like every team that has a bona fide superstar that is coming off the books this upcoming offseason has to be nervous. They have to be. And so for the Lakers, you know, whether you want to call it punting a season, I think they did to a certain extent, though I would probably phrase it more or frame it around gambling on their youth and really believing in their young guys that they can carry the load at least until a second actual superstar shows up. But, you know, the Lakers, they very clearly wanted to remain flexible heading into next year so that LeBron has his choice of superstar. And, yeah, I this year we'll see how it goes. But moving forward, I'd be really nervous, you know, the aforementioned Timberwolves with Jimmy Butler coming off of off of the books and Kawhi Leonard in Toronto. You know, it was great to see all of the, hey, he actually doesn't hate Toronto that much, like that you saw from Toronto. I thought that was hilarious, but we'll see how it all plays out.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I'm also in love with you being on my train and thinking OKC is going to really rampage this year, because I'm also very high on them. Yeah, perhaps irrationally so, but.
They were really good when Roberson was healthy. And now we'll see how he recovers from his injury. But when Roberson was healthy, they were a very different team. I would have liked to seen the Thunder with Roberson go up against Golden State, because that's how you defend them, with just a ton of long wings. Now they don't even have Carmelo's, you know, decaying corpse playing any kind of minutes. Like it's going to be great to watch that team play. Although I'm always going to hold it against Paul George that he put us through. Like the decision, he wants to stay out there, fine, that's cool. But that 3-part docuseries, like, that's unforgivable. I'm going to boo him just for that. I don't care that he wanted to stay in Oklahoma City. That docuseries, Drinking Wine with Dwayne Wade, was just awful.
I forgot that Lakers fans actually had to watch that, because I feel like you're the only ones who did. Like, I totally forgot that was a thing. Yeah, that's fair. That's fair to hold that against him.
I'd have liked to seen when that thing premiered, because you had a ton of, like, the third part, I think, happened after his reported decision was made, right? He didn't – it wasn't – I'd like to see the drop-off from the second part to the third part, how few people watched that third part.
All of Oklahoma City did, though. I made up for it. Like, no Lakers fans did, and every Thunder fan did.
So, like, 300 people.
Yeah, right. Mort, I know you're optimistic about the fit of Lonzo next to LeBron James. But let's talk about that. How do you see that playing out this year?
Lonzo obviously is very ball dominant, but at the same time, you know, coming from UCLA, he had this ability to play off the ball a little bit more. Like, he was a great catch and shoot player. He wasn't last year for reasons somewhat unknown. I think part of it was also him getting acclimated to the NBA speed and just the athleticism of the game. Now you have, like, the greatest player in the game, you know, creating open shots for him and creating him open opportunities. I just can't see Lonzo not benefiting greatly from that. I think the discussion next summer is going to be, so is Lonzo a product of LeBron? Like, I can't wait for NBA Twitter to start that debate, because that's going to be infuriating. But no, but you can see it, right? I mean, it's just, it's right there available for the pickings. But no, I think he's going to do better. I will say this, like, a lot of people crab on Lonzo, you know, you and I included have you know, crabbed a little bit on him for this past season, but his defense was NBA ready. Like, it was good. And I can't imagine that not improving further. And additionally, now I haven't read up on this. I just saw a small video. It seems like Lonzo has increased, improved his shooting motion. It seems he has a slightly higher release point now than before, which I think is really going to be key moving forward.
Yeah.
I think, when you talk about Lonzo, or when you talk about the point guard that you want to play alongside LeBron, like, the take that I feel strongest about, that I haven't even unleashed on Twitter quite yet, is that I think Drew Holiday is the best point guard you could have playing alongside LeBron. You want a guy who is good at the point of attack as a defender, You want him to be able to switch. You want him to be able to knock down jumpers. You want him to be able to be a low usage kind of point guard. And all of those things outside of – so Lonzo needs to improve at the point of attack in terms of his defense. And he obviously needs to improve his shooting. But he – Mort mentioned his defense last year. And in that, it's actually really interesting that they went after Rajon Rondo as like his backup and mentor kind of guy, because he defends in a lot of the ways that Rondo does. He just kind of he's always just kind of lurking. He blows up. He loves to blow up horns. It's like his favorite thing. He sees it getting set up, and if he's guarding the shooter that's on the strong side corner, he's going to leave as soon as that pass goes to the high post guy there. And he always steals, like, he just loves blowing up that play. And he has incredible instincts for the game. And offensively, like, one of the ways I can tell that you never watched Lonzo play basketball is if you start saying how, well, he needs the ball to be effective, and therefore he's not going to work with LeBron. That's really not how he operates. He's right. Really good at kind of floating on the weak side. He's really good at taking a snapshot of the defense and of the court before he receives the ball, and he makes a really quick decision. And what that does is LeBron is obviously going to demand a ton of strong side attention. The ball rotates over to Lonzo, and even if he isn't, you prefer him to be able to knock down that the shot as the ball rotates over to him. But even if he isn't able to, he makes a decision so quickly that whoever gets the pass after LeBron reverses the court is going to benefit greatly from how quickly Lonzo makes his decisions.
Mm-hmm. That's a great point. And really, when you think about the development of superstars in recent years, that's actually a trend. Like, players being able to make really quick decisions. You look at Giannis, you look at Kawhi, not initially, but he came into that a little bit more as he grew more comfortable with his jump shot. Like, you don't really see superstars today, young superstars, just stand there with the ball in their hands and look it out. Like, they take decisions right off the catch, really. Like, even before that ball is catched, like, they have an idea of, okay, I have options A, B, and C. Which one am I going to go with? Which I think is a really positive sign for Lonzo.
Yeah. And Brian, you can chime in here as well on this, but In my opinion, it's all about, because one of the things that we're kind of starting to see the game go to a little bit more is like the ISO heavy, you know, like Houston basically relies on getting a switch and then taking advantage of the switch in isolation. Mm-hmm. And I still think, though, there's value in make the defense move and then, you know, kind of guide the defense into the type of movement that you want them to move towards, and then take advantage and be able to attack the seams that are created by that movement. And that's where I think Lonzo is already really good as a rookie, and all of these things are going to continue to get better.
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, I think even as a cutter too, I think just having that kind of, like Anthony, you mentioned, you know, LeBron's going to reverse court, pass it to him, he's going to pass it back. Like, he can, if the defense is already rotated toward LeBron, which they're going to have to just because he's LeBron, in theory, that's going to open driving lanes for Lonzo. If it doesn't, he can start driving and kicking. Like, offensively, you can very easily see the two working together well. And then defensively, of course, you know, it really comes down to LeBron's effort during the regular season. But Lonzo, as you said, has a good mentor in Rondo. And I should clarify, Mort mentioned that we crapped on Lonzo this year. A lot of it was really just for his father. Like, most of the time, we actually said, you know, he had that shooting lull early in the year, which we pointed out. But most of the time, we actually said, ignore the father, and, like, there's a promising player here. But
this is true.
But the father is just so ever-present that, you know, hopefully his kids go back to, like, Estonia or Lithuania, wherever the hell they were, and we just don't have to deal with it again.
Oh, no, that club is in major financial issues right now because of that whole thing.
Wonderful.
Yeah. Like, they even had one hell of a press release essentially just slamming the entire Ball family, so that was nice.
Wonderful. Great. Well, he did start the JBA, right? I saw I saw the two younger ones won the inaugural JBA title, so maybe he'll be busy with that. Let's hope.
I saw that he wasn't even paying some of his athletes, which
oh really
is probably not great. It's great.
yeah,
wonderful. I want to ask because the Lakers do have a lot of good young prospects in Ball, Brandon Ingram, Kyle Kuzma, Josh Hart. Who do you think has the highest upside of those guys?
I'm always partial to wings because I think that's the most important position in basketball right now. Mm-hmm. You look at all of the champions for the last, I would say, decade-ish, probably even further since LeBron's career started, really. And they have had an elite wing, an elite small forward who can switch down, who can switch up, who can knock down jumpers. The most valuable shots in basketball are the corner three-pointer and dunks, and wings take the most of those. So with all that said, it's Ingram, right? He plays he's 6'9". He played some point guard last year when Lonzo dealt with some of his injuries issues and looked really good doing it. I think a lot of why he looked really good doing it was because the other option was Tyler Ennis. And we don't have to get into Tyler Ennis, but I just think, you know, for the things that LeBron has never played with a small forward who is capable of doing all of the things that Ingram is capable of doing. And it's going to be fascinating to watch LeBron because it's going to take some getting used to, right? Like LeBron is going to pass the ball off to Ingram, and Ingram is going to be capable of making that secondary play, that secondary creative play in ways that Jeff Green couldn't, for example, you know, and it's going to be really interesting to watch that happen. And even if it doesn't work, then you basically put Ingram and you let him just roll with the second units, and Ingram would feast against opposing benches. So that's number one. It's kind of like a two tier system. So Ingram and Lonzo, I think, belong in tier one, mm-hmm. and then you got like the tier two guys of Kuzma, Josh Hart, and then you know they drafted Wagner. We'll see how he looks, but to me, the guy who I think is going to get a ton of cred on NBA Twitter is going to be Josh Hart. He's going to win a championship somewhere, whether it's with the Lakers, wherever he goes. He is that kind of role player, and I'm all in on Josh Hart. I can't buy enough stock on him.
Yeah.
I'm just upset that none of you guys mentioned Isaac Bonga. I am really truly upset. This guy is going to be special. He's just a few years away from being ready, but oh good lord, he's special.
He reminds me way too much of Sun Yue. It was kind of funny, like they asked I think it was Jesse Buss. Yeah, it was Jesse Buss. They asked him for an interview for Lakers.com. Mm. What did you see from Isaac Bonga? He looked like he struggled a little bit. Like how do you feel about his development at this point? And Buss is trying to be optimistic, and he goes, well, there was that one play.
Oh, no.
That's probably not great. That's probably not great if you're able to isolate the one good play that Isaac Bonga made in Summer League.
It sounds like Markelle Fultz's rookie season. Mort, we've mocked some of the Lakers signings this summer outside of LeBron. Are you optimistic about any of them?
I mean, I'm optimistic that certain things are going to happen. You know, he's going to score the basketball. Sure. That's not going to change. We're going to see some weird quotes from some of the players. There is going to be a report some point this season about a couple of guys bumping heads, and it's going to be perfectly fine, but NBA Twitter is going to blow it up out of proportion. I'm optimistic in the sense that Rajon Rondo is not J.R. Smith. I mean, that's something when you look at it from a LeBron point of view. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, look, there's undoubtedly a lot of basketball talent and a lot of basketball IQ on this roster, but at the same time, you have the Michael Beasleys and the JaVale McGees, not exactly the high IQ types. So what you kind of hope is that you can sort of bridge their lack of understanding of the game sometimes with some of these absolute geniuses and see if they can write out a product that is overall what you expect.
Yeah. Bleacher Report, I forget who it was. I want to say it was like Leo Sefcovic, but I apologize if it wasn't him. But someone interviewed Beasley recently, and he was actually talking about like how this kind of like band of misfits, and he's like, actually, if you think about it, like, so we're not all like terrible shooters, and like with all of the passers that we have, with LeBron, with Rondo, with Ball, like a lot of us are actually going to shoot better than we have before, which I thought was like, it's interesting to hear that coming from a player who has been practicing with these guys and is like starting to see that in action. So, you know, like KCP has just been so inconsistent, but it wouldn't totally shock me if he has a career high year from 3-point range, or if Beasley, you know, he was like a 35-36% shooter from three, but like just because LeBron's going to get so much defensive attention, but also Ball and Ingram, like these complimentary guys actually could be better than we expect.
I think the one thing to keep in mind with all of the Lakers additions in the offseason, like to me, the deciding factor of this Lakers season is going to be, is Luke Walton capable of looking the veterans in the face and saying, actually, your younger counterparts are actually better than you, and they're going to get the minutes? If he isn't if he isn't able to do that or willing to do that, then the Lakers are going to have problems, because then you start leaning on Lance Stephenson while he isn't in Indiana, right? Then you start leaning on Rajon Rondo, who is great in short bursts, like playoff Rondo and national TV Rondo is a thing. But he isn't very good on like the 14th Wednesday of the NBA season, when you know, when they aren't necessarily playing somebody who demands his respect. Right. So that's where that's the number one thing I'm watching for. And I thought it was really interesting that Beasley made that point, and KCP actually said so as well, that like he's coming off of shooting 38% from three last year, which is the best season that he's had from there. That improvement might happen naturally because he's still only 25, I think. He's heading into his year 26 season, and so I think he might be able to take a step forward there. He also had that month in December where he was dealing with his legal issues, and he only shot in those, like, I think 11 games that he was able to play in, he shot 29%. And so if you just let his averages from the other months just kind of carry through there, he becomes a 40% three-point shooter. And he's also going to be dealing with a ton more space this year. And it's not just because of LeBron. Like, teams at the end of the year had to start adjusting for Ingram being able to create and catch and shoot, and he was starting to demand some gravity. We laugh at JaVale McGee because of all of the Shaq in a full stuff, but he's one of the best finishers, you know, coming down the lane in the NBA in short stretches. He can only play like 15 minutes a night because of his asthma thing. But when he's out there, teams have to tag him, which is going to create more space for shooters on the perimeter as well. So I'm interested to see how Kuzma does in his rookie, in his sophomore season. In this respect, KCP as well. Josh Hart shot nearly 40% as well last year. The Lakers have a few shooters. It's just a matter, I mean, those names that I mentioned are young guys. They aren't veterans. So if Luke relies heavily on Lance Stephenson, then this rotation starts to make a lot less sense.
Yeah. Well, luckily, Luke is not Byron Scott, so you actually have a chance of seeing guys below 30.
Luke Walton, not Byron Scott. Like, that's line one of his resume.
Yeah, exactly. For real. All right, guys, let's flip over to the Golden State Warriors. There's not, like, we don't need to talk about their big four. We know what to expect from them. I think the big story with them is DeMarcus Cousins, obviously. We don't know when he's going to be coming back. At some point in the regular season, presumably. Yeah,
or if he's coming back, right?
Yeah. I mean, I guess. So what do you expect, Anthony, from Boogie this season, if anything?
Well, fortunately, he's playing. Like, if you were just any player recovering from that injury, which takes, by all accounts, at least a year, a calendar year to come back from, you would want it to be in Golden State, where, yes, their possessions are going to matter more because they're a really good team, but by those kinds of standards, it's going to be the lowest leverage situations of any player in the league coming back from that injury. So he can take his time completely. He can focus totally on getting healthy. And when he comes back, like, he's going to benefit from – we were just talking about some of the spacing that the Lakers are going to have. The Warriors are the spacing team. They're NASA. Mm. They are going to – so Boogie is going to come back and have as much space that he wants to work with when he comes back. The Warriors are also – this is insane to say. This next sentence is wild, but the Warriors don't need DeMarcus Cousins. So if he doesn't work out, then like they can all just kind of wipe their hands and head into next offseason as if nothing happened. I just think if he comes back, and I think it won't be till later in the season, if he comes back and he's like 85% of what we remember, 75% of what we remember of Boogie, then, you know, it's just another season of, oh, yeah, everybody's promising, but there's the Warriors.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, exactly. I mean, Mort and I have discussed it before. I don't see them having any reason to bring him back before, like, February, probably around the All-Star break. I think they do need to bring him back during the regular season just so he can develop chemistry with those guys. You don't want to throw him as his first action, like, a week before the playoffs. But, Mort, that goes to this next question, and we talked about it a little bit when we were going through the Warriors over-under a few weeks ago. But until Boogie comes back, like, what do the Warriors have to play for in the regular season? Or are they just going to, like, half-ass their way through it like they did last year?
Why stop what's working? I mean, half-ass it all the way through, like, 82 games. They're going to win 55 just by showing up, essentially.
Right, right.
So I think what could be a pretty nice subplot is kind of getting some of the young guys involved. Like, you have a pretty interesting bench. You have Jordan Bell, who's, I'm assuming, going to be the starting center even after next year when Boogie has probably moved on. You have Quinn Cook, who's a rotational player. You have Jacob Evans. Like, you have these young guys who can do something, and I think that would be pretty nice to see a Warriors team giving the top stars, like, a fair restriction on the minutes, like 32 at tops, maybe even less, and then just go with the youth and try to do what Dallas did back in the day of by creating like a 12-year-long window. I think that would be interesting. I don't think it's going to happen. I think they're going to focus on, you know, the chemistry going into the playoffs and all that, but I would probably go that route if I was them because, I mean, look at that talent. They don't need half of it.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I agree. I think it makes sense. I think the regular season for them should be developing their young guys because, as you said, like keeping the vets fresh for the playoffs is critical. But also, like, they did lose some bench talent this offseason. And, you know, it's not like, no offense to JaVale McGee or Zaza, like, they're not tremendous losses. But, you know, outside of their top five, they have Iggy still, Sean Livingston, but like there are a lot of question marks outside of that.
Well, and you also have to take into account the toll of playing in what is it, 4 or 5 straight finals at this point? And like that wears on teams, not just physically playing whatever amounts to, I think it's on average they're playing about 106 games a season at this point. Or 103 games per season, but those playoff games are may as well count for 1.5 regular season games because of the lengthy minutes and the high leverage. But also mentally, like last season, you saw Steve Kerr step away and let the Warriors coach themselves for a game, right? Mm-hmm. And that was to keep them interested and keep them fresh mentally, just to introduce something new. Like I work from home, and. And in working from home, there are some days that I just have to leave the house with no reason whatsoever. Just leave the house, retrain my brain, like just go out and drive and focus on something that isn't basketball for a while, just so that I can come back and stay fresh. And for the Warriors, that was like their equivalent of, we're just going to go out and go for a cruise, just to focus on a new way of thinking about basketball, just so that, you know, we can stay fresh and be ready for the higher leverage situations when they present themselves. This stretch is going to take a toll on them, and Steve Kerr saw it first up close and personal with his time with the Chicago Bulls. He's the first person to say that even if Michael doesn't take a year off the way he did, that they wouldn't have won eight straight finals or whatever the number, seven straight finals, whatever the number would have been. He says that they were exhausted by the time that third finals series took place. And I think he is the perfect coach because of that experience for this Warriors team.
Yeah. I mean, even last year he was saying, like, this is the hardest one we've had yet. A lot of the players said that too. And I think, like, David West especially said, he gave some interview to, like, the Undefeated where he said, you know, you guys don't know, like, half of what we went through this year, which means there's probably a tell-all book coming out kind of soon that's going to be really fascinating to, like, hear what he was referring to or if we ever find out. But yeah, I mean, I think it's going to be tough for them. You mentioned, like, Rajon Rondo, how, like, on the 14th Wednesday of the regular season, he's just not going to get up for that game. And it's going to be the same thing for the Warriors, too. Like, how are you going to get motivated to play the New York Knicks without Kristaps Porzingis? Like, you're not. That's kind of what I'm thinking is going to be the narrative of their season, is, like, they're going to be on cruise control really until Boogie comes back. And then, like, at that point, maybe they turn it on. But, like, we're going to just get kind of bored of them this year, if that's, like, a fair thing to say, which is weird to say because they're still going to be a 60-win team most likely, and they've got some of, like, the all-time greatest players ever to play this game. We should be celebrating their greatness even if their fans are annoying, but instead it's just like, you know, there's this whole, like, they ruined the NBA narrative, and seeing them be able to coast and still demolish teams most nights is only going to further fuel that.
Well, I think there's two separate issues here, right? Like, their ability to coast, like, every title team coasts. So that's that's not necessarily unique to their situation. I actually like their presence because it forced the rest of the NBA to go out and try to catch them. Like, LeBron isn't a Laker if Golden State doesn't exist in their current iteration, I don't think.
Right.
And LeBron isn't a Laker, and the Lakers probably use their younger assets to go acquire Kawhi Leonard a season earlier, because in any other year, LeBron and Kawhi on the same team is a title, right? But the Lakers have to be smarter than that. They have to bet on their younger guys, and then bet on being able to sign Kawhi next offseason so that they go into next year with a team that might be able to beat Golden State. So, like, I think Golden State's presence actually makes the league better. I don't think it necessarily ruined it, though. You know, I the competitive stuff, it does get kind of old. Poor Houston. Like, if I was a Houston fan, like, they killed Golden State, killed Daryl Morey. Like, they drove him so insane that he thought acquiring Carmelo Anthony was a good idea. But I think next year the Warriors' number one competition is going to be their own expectations and the expectations for them. One of my principles in life is under promise and overproduce, right? And that's impossible for the Warriors. That's legitimately, literally impossible for them to do, is to go out there and try to tell their fans, no, keep expectations at a decent place. Like, if it's not going to happen. And so it'll be interesting to see how they handle that dynamic.
Yeah. I mean, it's, you're right. Like, it's title or bust for them, which is unfair to some degree, just given the fatigue factors that we talked about. And, like, the Western Conference might be the strongest version ever, or at least in recent memory. Like, they have to go through an absolute gauntlet just to get back to the finals, at which point, like, Boston could be waiting there, and Boston's a really good team. Like, you know, they're going to go through a tougher road this season, most likely, than they did last season. Houston might be worse, but, like, overall their competition is going to be better. Like, there are going to be more a higher number of legitimate threats to them. I think, at least. I mean, there was one last year. It was Houston. Like
Utah and OKC, I think, both give the Warriors some issues next year. OKC especially. Mm-hmm. I think people are sleeping on that team. That if OKC plays a Warriors team that hasn't quite figured it out with DeMarcus Cousins quite yet, they're tired from all these finals appearances in a row, it wouldn't shock me if OKC upset them.
Hey, man, I'm so happy. You and I are going to be driving the OKC bandwagon this year as not OKC fans, because I am right there with you. I think they could. There's a world in which they could be the second best team in the West.
It's not necessarily likely,
but like it could happen.
And just imagine the documentary series that Paul George would have for that series.
All right, guys, let's flip over to the Phoenix Suns, who pulled off an out-of-nowhere trade the other day. the unexpected, like, August 30th Woj bomb. So they sent Brandon Knight and Marquise Chris, since we're talking about the Houston Rockets. They sent those two guys to Houston, further driving Daryl Morey mad. He, or the Rockets, I should say, sent back Ryan Anderson and Morton's baby boy, D'Anthony Melton. So, Mort, I know you're a big fan of this. You don't like it for Houston. You love this deal for Phoenix, right?
Oh, absolutely. I think D'Anthony Melton is the guy you look back at in 3 or 4 years' time and go, what the hell did they do? I think he's that type of player. To me, he's going to be like Avery Bradley on steroids. So I just don't see why they would give up this type of asset. And people go, oh, well... Like you and I talked about it before we started recording, that you know now Houston has a backup point guard in form of Brandon Knight. Well, Brandon Knight played 106 games in the 2 years before he missed a full year, so I don't exactly deem him reliable at this point because you just don't know about his body and his health. You just don't know. I think I even saw a report like that he's not going to be ready for the start of this season as well. So,
oh, really?
Yeah, I think I saw something like that. And I get that Ryan Anderson... like is exposed defensively, but that's in the playoffs, and I get that, but he's still a bomber. Like if you need someone to stretch the floor from the power forward position, yeah, he's still there. You can still go to that chip, and you would still have a D'Anthony Melton on your team. Like if you didn't pull off this trade, I just don't get it for Houston. For Phoenix, on the other hand, now they have two of my darlings from the second round, Eli Okobo and D'Anthony Melton, and if they share the court just once this year. I mean, I'm going to faint. I would love that so much. I'm all in on the rookie hype train right now. But yeah, I love it for Phoenix. Absolutely. I think they've had one hell of a summer outside of the Philly trade. I think that was atrocious. They overpaid dramatically for Bridges. But outside of that, I mean, I'm digging what they did. I get the argument for Houston wanting something a little bit more safer and something more established. But I just have to question whether, you know, Brandon Knight, again, having played 106 games over the last 3 years, is a better chip to go in on than D'Anthony Melton.
Yeah, we'll talk about the Houston side when we do that division preview. But
right.
Yeah, I mean, you said Ryan Anderson gets played off the floor in the playoffs. Luckily, he's in Phoenix now, so he won't have the chance to get played off the floor in the playoffs.
That is true. No pressure.
That's that black guy thinking meme, right? Like, yeah. Played off the floor if you're not on the floor.
Right, exactly. Well, I mean, I did see Woj reported that they plan to start Ryan Anderson, which I get it to some extent, but like... Oof. This feels very much like a top-down, like, Sarver wants to make the playoffs this year. And, Anthony, I saw you tweeted about this yesterday. We're like, you know, LeBron joins the Western Conference. The Western Conference has, like, 11 or 12 teams that feasibly could make the playoffs this year. And here Sarver is. It's like, now's the time to go all in. Let's go for the playoffs, baby. What the hell are you doing, Phoenix? Like, this, you know... I get that Melton, like, long-term could be the best player in this deal, so I get what, you know, I understand the appeal for Phoenix, but, like, who is their starting point guard right now?
Yeah, no, they're looking Melton. for They have. Right? They're looking for one. I mean, apparently they're in the market for one. I think it should be Okobo, but I've been on that wagon for a month, and people are calling me insane. But
yeah.
I actually think Melton makes a little bit more sense for the starting lineup, especially if they're going to start Ryan Anderson. Right, they need as many defenders as they can put on a court. If Devin Booker, Ryan Anderson, and DeAndre Ayton are all going to be starters. Yeah. Like Ayton, people think he's a specimen in all these things, but he's not good defensively. He can't switch onto anybody. He looked bad defensively in Summer League, right? That was against Summer League guys. And Ryan Anderson, like we were joking about him getting played off the court in the postseason, but in the regular season, and it's not like he turns into a decent defender either. So like I think Melton, and it's for a lot of these reasons that I liked Melton to stay in Houston, because he did a lot of the things. He could play alongside either Chris Paul or James Harden. Yeah. I think for Booker, Melton is a really good, he's the kind of point guard you want alongside Booker, because he can do all the defensive stuff and then allow Booker to focus on his offense. So I think they need to start Melton, and they're saying that the Suns are interested in trading for a starting caliber point guard. Like, what are you guys doing? Like, just the tanking would be so easy next year because of how deep how deep the Western Conference is. Like, just go out there and lose 70 games and then draft whoever that you want to continue to fill out your roster. But Sarver is out there like, no, I have to sell these tickets. I need to make it look like I care to my fans or whatever. But fans are starting to come around to the idea of tanking. Phoenix. Oh, Phoenix.
Yeah. I think you can look at it in two different ways. Because when I say that I support what Phoenix have done this season, I mean, or this summer, I'm looking at the long term. Because in no way should Phoenix try to be competitive at this point. It would just be dumb. Not just because of the Western Conference, but they're not ready. Mm-hmm. Like, who do you go to in a tight game? Tyson Chandler, who's about $1.6 million? Like, what do you do? Like, it just doesn't make any sense. That's also why the Trevor Ariza contract, I mean, it was dumb. I get it to some extent that they want to get a guy in who is older and who can, like, parlay a little bit of wisdom in a sort of Luol Deng type of role. But I mean,
that worked out well for the Lakers.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, you know, you don't know how exactly that went on behind the scenes, because Deng, from everything we know, is just one of those guys who takes, you know, players under his wing and talk to him a lot and stuff like that. And I don't know if Trevor is that guy. Like, if that's what they're hoping for, I mean, I hope they did their homework. If Sarver is indeed looking at this year going, hey, let's try to win, then yeah, obviously that's going to change the narrative.
Leroy Jenkins. Like, he's just like... I think Ariza makes sense in this sense for me, is that when Phoenix falls out of playoff contention in week one, they can start hitting the market and maybe fetch themselves a conditional first round pick, or, you know, a highly protected first round pick, or a couple seconds as the season goes along and a team realizes that they could use Trevor Ariza. I actually think Ariza makes a ton of sense for the Lakers right now that they have an open roster spot. If it's just like a buyout kind of situation, well, then you just slide Ariza in there and you got another wing. But he makes that kind of sense for any number of contenders, which means there's going to be a bidding market for him out there. So we'll see how that turns out. It's only a one-year deal. There's really no such thing as a bad one-year deal, unless you're Lance Stephenson. we'll see how that turns out. And the other concern that I have here with, and this is the same kind of issue I mentioned with the Lakers, is that the Suns have guys who play Ryan Anderson's position who are going to be, who need minutes to develop. And if Sarver is all in on this contend now crap, well, then those guys aren't going to get their minutes, and that actually limits the organization's ceiling moving forward. So we'll see how they make that work.
Right. Yeah, like that's kind of my question, even going back to the point guard thing. It's like, all right, you want to compete, and Woj said they're looking for a veteran point guard, but like, if you want to compete, but you're turning it over to two rookies in Okobo and Melton, that's not going to work. And like Booker has improved as a ball handler, as a passer, but I thought they said they wanted to like dial that back a little bit, and they wanted him to be more of a catch and shoot guy this year. So like he could fill that role, but I don't know if he's going to. And then like if, as you said, Anthony, like if they start, I mean, there's a world in which they could start Ariza, Anderson, and Tyson Chandler instead of Ayton, which would be dumb. But like they could do it. I'm not going to rule it out, but like at, you know, as you said, they've got guys like Dragan Bender, T.J. Warren, Josh Jackson, all of whom need minutes. Like this, I agree. They're, like the Ariza contract, especially, it's a 1-year deal, whatever. And as you said, they could flip it later. Like if they're willing to take back bad salary, it was like 1 year, $15 million. That's in the range of like an Evan Turner, a Kent Bazemore, something like that. So they could maybe use that to extract assets, especially once they fall out of the playoff race. But like, I just don't get the vision of this team at all. And I feel like, you know, I there's a world in which like their young talent, they have some of the probably like one of the best young cores in the league. But like, I have zero faith that they're actually going to develop those guys the right way.
Yeah, they name me the guy outside of Devin Booker who's made legitimate strides forward in the Phoenix organization over this. What's their thing, their version of the process? I think it's like the timeline or something. So like name me the timeline guy who has taken legitimate strides forward in their development. And it's hard to name one, right? Like Dragan Bender has lost 3 straight years at Summer League. Marquise Chris last year was like, hilarious on the court with how bad his instincts were. It reached a point where I thought to myself, all right, this dude needs to stop thinking, period. Like when he thinks, he makes the wrong decision every time. So like I if they're able to develop it and if they're able to rebuild their culture and actually develop these guys, great, awesome, cool. But until I actually see that, Phoenix, like they need a complete organizational shift, and it kind of goes back to the number one rule in professional sports is you're never going to be good if you can't trust your owner, and they can't. Like, why would Phoenix Suns fans trust their owner? And you know, we'll see how it all turns out.
One more thing to that, because I wrote a Phoenix piece about 6 months back, I want to say. And they were looking at getting the Milwaukee pick as well. They were looking like they had 4 first-round picks or something like that. Maybe it was 3 first-rounders in the first pick and the second. Like they were just loaded with picks at that point. And Ryan McDonough, the GM, was like, no, we're going to max like have 2 rookies on the roster or something. Like he had like an arbitrary number. Like he capped himself off because he wanted to get veterans. Like we should probably trade some of those picks for vets. I was just like, what? So my entire article was actually built up on the premise like, don't do that, that's dumb.
Well, especially in this age where rookies are coming in and actually legitimately producing in roles with responsibilities. Like there is nothing more valuable right now than a rookie that outperforms a rookie contract, right? Because that allows you, like the Lakers right now have the opportunity to go out and get Kawhi Leonard because they're relying on their rookies to be able to perform beyond this season on their rookie deals. And the Warriors are the Warriors right now because they continue to rely on young guys to produce alongside their superstars. Like that's, and the fact that the Suns are watching that and saying, no, we're going to do the opposite. That's a thought that dawns on you guys. Like, all right, cool. I mean, great. That's 4 extra wins for the Lakers every year, but all right.
Right. Well, speaking of dysfunctional franchises, Sacramento Kings are also in this division. And if you thought we couldn't say nice things about the Phoenix Suns, oh boy, buckle up. I mean, really, the first question we have to ask is about Marvin Bagley. Let's not focus on him versus Luka Doncic, because I think it's just unfair to him at this point, and it's going to be held against him his whole career, which sucks. But
can we then talk about how he'll play a small forward?
So that is my question. Like, what do you expect from Marvin Bagley this year? And much like we just talked about in Phoenix, do you have any faith in Sacramento to develop him properly?
No.
Yep.
No, I mean, it goes back to show me proof of guys who have made strides forward in your organization. And and like the Kings, Boogie was obviously became a superstar, but he was going to be a superstar, right? Like Devin Booker became a superstar in Phoenix, but he was going to be a superstar. He just has that talent. Right. And in Phoenix, like, find me the guys on the peripherals, on the perimeter of your core that you have actually built into role players, and they are non-existent. If anything, it's reached a point where I'm looking at the Kings and Suns rosters as they try to sell off their young pieces or give up on them because they think that they're lost causes. Like, Willie Cauley-Stein is going to be a solid NBA player if he gets out of Sacramento, right? He has the tools. He just needs somebody to step in as a coach and be like, no, Willie, you're not an ISO guy. You're you have phenomenal feet. You are laterally talented enough to be able to switch. You can finish at the rim. You can contest at the rim. Like, understand what you need to be good at to be an impactful NBA player, not a talented NBA player. And we haven't seen that yet with Sacramento and their understanding of what to do there. So, like, I could see Vlade walking into practice one day. He sees Marvin Bagley hit, like, two straight three-pointers, and he says, shooting guard. Like, and like, the Lakers exceptionalism to me is not necessarily fans thinking that they have a chance on any given free agent. Like, that's a thing, whatever. But to me, the downside to Lakers exceptionalism is that there's this feeling that in order to work for the Lakers, you have to have played for the Lakers. And fortunately for the Lakers, though, like, they've had some all-time great thinkers that played for the Lakers that were actually – Jerry West is, in my opinion, the greatest executive of all time. They got lucky in the sense that, like, he happened to be there. Whereas, like, the Kings are doing this thing where Peja Stojakovic, come on down. Bobby Jackson, come on down. Vlade Divac, come on down. Like, are we going to see, like – I don't know. Doug Christie is their play-by-play guy. I'm sure he has he gets to sit down and talk about player personnel moves. And what that does is, like, not only does it limit the pool of hiring candidates so that there's no way to know if you're getting the actual best guy here, but it also isolates you from the type of thinking that would help the organization take strides forward. And for the Kings, like, what if all of these guys are in agreement that Marvin Bagley is a shooting guard or small forward or whatever, and there's nobody to call bullcrap and actually look at Marvin Bagley and what he's actually good at and say, no, guys, no, this is a bad idea. This is not going to work out. But because it's because it becomes an echo chamber, because these guys all think similarly, there's no way to know that these things are actually going to be hashed out.
Well, there is. They just don't listen to it, because I'm going to take you guys 4 years back to the 2014 NBA draft. The Kings actually had fans, like analytically inclined fans, be a part of the whole drafting process. Like, they would come up with numbers, and they apparently, like, that group did a wonderful job, like, coming up with player weaknesses and player strengths and projections and stuff like that. And then at draft, You saw this video. It was Grantland who had that documentary series. Mm-hmm. When there was time to call the pick, like, they just disregarded everything and became like this Vivek Ranadive gut feeling selection. Like, that, they spent hundreds, maybe even thousands of hours, all these guys combined, looking at all this data and presenting everything, and they got, you know, applause and all that, and then come drafting time, look, all this data we've assembled over the past few months, let's fucking ignore it and take a gut feeling on
fake news
on Nick Stauskas. Yeah, 1, 2, 3, Nick Rooks, because that's right. Yeah.
Right. It was like Stauskas versus Vonleh, right?
I think it was down to that, right? But here's the thing, Noah Vonleh at least projected at that point to be a lot better than he was. Like, fair, you can always go bad with a draft pick, but statistically, like, he was just so far ahead of the curve, at least compared to Stauskas. It was incredible. Yeah.
Well, I just think that it comes down to for Sacramento, like, it doesn't matter who they would have taken. They could have taken Noah Vonleh, and he wouldn't have worked out. I'm willing to predict. This is might be a crazy hot. If Noah Vonleh got picked by the Kings, he would be a bust. And like for the Kings, like they don't develop guys that aren't already that don't already have the keys to the kingdom in terms of individual talent. They just don't help those guys take those steps forward. Like, you have to be some kind of special to have DeMarcus Cousins for as long as they did and never make the playoffs. Like, you got to be that's a level of ineptitude that even I would strive for in my podcasting abilities. it's just not, and you know, for where they sit right now, like they spent last year a ton of money on George Hill, right? Mm-hmm. And didn't get anything for it. They've made signings again on the peripherals here to try to build up the rest of their roster, and I don't think they're going to have anything to show for it. And it's kind of too bad, because like let's say Marvin Bagley goes where he's supposed to go in like that 5 to 7 range, that would put him, I don't even know who was drafting in that range, but
Dallas.
Yeah, like I would trust Dallas to be able to develop this guy. And this was always my concern over the course of the process is all right, they're assembling or they're drafting or acquiring all of this high-end lottery talent. And if it isn't developing, then it legitimately becomes bad for the league, right? Because mm-hmm. this high-end talent is not being taken advantage of. And for the Kings, like, they are legitimately bad for the league because they're drafting all this high-end talent and squandering it all. And mm-hmm. and all, some of these guys have tools that would actually help the some NBA team out there, but they won't, because the Kings exist.
Right. Well, what concerns me is, you know, look at their roster construction right now. They take Marvin Bagley. They already have Willie Cauley-Stein. They already have Scal. They already have Harry Giles, all of whom they've spent first-round picks on, if not lottery picks, in recent years. They sign Bielitsa. I think they still have Kosta Kufis, too. Like, they have, like, 7 or 8 guys in their front court. They're just not...
And traded for Deonta Davis.
Oh, God, yeah. So they have, like, that many guys in their front court, all of whom they can't manufacture minutes for. So, like, that does lend you to think, are they going to play some of these, like, just play super big lineups and play Bagley at the 3 or play Scal at the 3, which is a terrible idea and is not going to develop them at all. So it's like, I mean, that really, if I thought, you know, the Suns were concerned about and the Lakers were concerned about, like, are the young guys going to get enough minutes over the veterans? The Kings, it's just like, what the fuck is your roster balance right now? Like, what are you doing? Like, you know, their backcourt, like, they actually have talent there. De'Aaron Fox is good. Buddy Hield has shown flashes. Bogdan Bogdanovic is good. I like the Yogi Ferrell signing, but that's, like, it. Like, if a single guy gets hurt, they are screwed. And then their front court, again, it's just, like, they are so in desperate need to make a trade or make a couple trades to balance out that roster, but then they're just going to be selling low, most likely, on these lottery guys. So, ugh.
Well, it's just, again, it's like with Phoenix. We laughed at Phoenix at how they looked at, they saw the rest of the Western Conference and they saw the direction it was going in, and they still Leroy Jenkins themselves, right?
Right.
And like for Sacramento, they see the direction that the NBA is going in, right? In this modern era, you need wings. You need to have wings who can switch down and switch up and knock down three-pointers and finish at the rim and defend all over the place and defend on the perimeter and also be able to handle themselves in the post every so often. And the Kings just said, nope, all centers.
Right.
Yeah. Right. They looked at the modern NBA where, like, legitimately good centers in any other era – are being phased out. Like, Enes Kanter, if he was dropped into the 90s, he would be looked back on as like, holy crap, look how good Enes Kanter used to be, right? Mm-hmm. You could drop Brook Lopez into any other era, and he'd be like, holy crap, look at this 7-footer who can also step out and knock down threes and finish at the rim and do all these things, and he's really smart. but he's being phased out. And the Kings said to themselves, all those centers, and while all these centers get phased out, we're going to have all the centers. We're going to take advantage of this market inefficiency that doesn't exist.
Yeah, they saw the Sixers creating this supersized lineup, and they're like, the Sixers are the future of the NBA. We need as many big bodies as possible, not realizing that a lot of the Sixers guys are actually versatile, whereas their guys... I mean, they could be...
I'm glad you brought up the Sixers real quick, because this is just the best description of what, you know, how the Kings think. They wanted to save money on Carl Landry and Jason Thompson's contract. So they shipped them to Philly for and paid a bunch of draft picks to get those guys off the cap so they could have cap space. And then they went out and used that cap space on Rajon Rondo and Marco Bellinelli.
Like, they tried to get Wes Matthews, but then he said no.
Yeah, and that was Wes Matthews after an Achilles rupture.
Right, like 3 months after.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So that's great. I completely agree, Anthony. Like, there's a fundamental problem in the way that they think, the way that they operate, that the way they view the market, the way they view themselves. Like, it... You could basically go to the Kings, like if you were like an external consultant or whatever, and you go, look, every thought that you might have had over the last 12 months is why you're failing. Whenever you have a new thought, do the opposite, and your result is more likely to be better.
Well, Vivek always reminds me, remember the first new Jurassic Park movie that just that came out like a couple of years ago? And there's that scene where he could very easily have just let the pilot fly in and rescue everybody, but instead flew into the dome that let all the pterodactyls out and killed all the customers. Like, it just it reminds me, that's the exact thing that you're talking about. Like, Vivek, your instincts tell you to hop in this helicopter and try to be the hero, but you should do the opposite of that and not kill all your customers with pterodactyls. Like, you should just like Marvin Bagley's out there like chewing on somebody's arm out there because Vivek is out there thinking that he's a hero.
That should be like on the program for every Kings game this year, just like a picture of pterodactyl, like Vivek photoshopped into a helicopter flying into a pterodactyl dome.
Exactly,
man. All right, let's finish things up with the Los Angeles Clippers, because I think the Kings made us too mad. Mort, I know you had them very low on your league pass rankings because you think they're basically just a transient team, but that said, they do have a decent starting five. They've got some bench depth.
Mm-hmm.
The West is really deep, obviously. But do you think this team has a chance to compete for the playoffs as currently constructed?
No. I think it would require Tobias Harris to come out and just unleash hell upon the league. Mm-hmm. I think that's what it would require. You look at the team, like Danilo Gallinari is going to play like 20 minutes. And then he's gonna get injured. Right. He's gonna come back, you know, a month later. He's gonna play like five or six games. And he's gonna get injured. Like, it's gonna be one of those on and off again, and again and again. Juwan Evans not ready. Shai not ready yet. Jerome Robinson, that was a stretch. Avery Bradley has been, you know, pretty bad since leaving Boston. I mean, I like the Luke Mbamute signing, but like not for them. If you get what I mean. Yeah. Like, he was good in Houston, but for that specific team. I'm not sure what he's going to offer them. Montrezl Harrell is good. I really like that guy. But again, like, he's a complimentary piece. And a complimentary piece to what?
Yeah. Yeah, they feel like they're going to be competitive most nights. Like, I don't think they're going to get blown out all that often. Right. But, like, yeah, they do feel like they'll lose, like, by 5 to 10 points most nights kind of team.
Yeah, and you know, that can have its value, but I'm just not seeing like where they win their games. Again, like, it is possible for Tobias Harris to reach a new level, I think. We saw it last year, so he could do it again. But that level would just have to be so insanely high. I mean, our entire perception of who Tobias Harris is as a player would have to change for them to be competitive.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, Lou Williams, he, you know.
Well, I think so. We've now talked about three straight teams now that their number one problem isn't necessarily a personnel thing. It isn't necessarily an X's and O's thing. Like it's not a coaching decision thing. It's an inability to recognize where they currently stand. Like, mm-hmm. unfortunately, I am completely out of shape and can no longer wear. Like I went yesterday to Kohl's and just bought a ton of extra large shirts because like I can no longer wear large, and like it was a crappy feeling in the moment, but like I'm helping everybody else around me because they don't see me like squished into a large shirt anymore, you know, and like with all of these teams, they need to have that kind of come to Jesus moment of we are not capable of contending right now. And if mm-hmm. all of these teams recognize that, if Phoenix mm-hmm. recognized it, if Sacramento recognized it, if the Clippers recognized it, and they completely bought into rebuilding while the Western Conference is as insane as it is, because losses are going to be easy to come by, right? We all agree about that. So like mm-hmm. if they all kind of recognized, okay, now isn't the time to try to contend. Now isn't the time. Now is the time to really hash out all of these organizational issues and fix them while we're also fixing our roster and building for the future. Well, then that, they start to make a lot more sense. But all of these teams have convinced themselves, no, actually, maybe we might be able to contend and we might be able to get to like the 43 win mark. Like if you aim for the middle, you shoot for the stars, you land on the moon. You aim for the middle, where does that leave you if you don't reach your absolute ceiling? And mm-hmm. and where that leaves you is NBA purgatory of like that 8 to 10 pick range. And that's not where you want to be. Just suck. Welcome the suck, and you'll be better off long term.
Yeah. I mean, so they have a lot of guys in contract years. They have Harris, they have Gortat, they have Beverly. Bradley, I think only like $2 million of his 2019-2020 salary is guaranteed. So they could go into the season thinking they're going to compete whatever. Come January, if they are completely out of the playoff race, do you guys think they then look at, you know, look critically and like say, okay, you know, maybe it's time to blow this thing apart and let's like restock on picks. Let's suck for the last couple months of the season. Let's bolster our own pick. Or do you think they just stubbornly, you know, stick by the roster the whole year?
I think it'll be the latter, and it's because they have convinced themselves that they have a chance at Kawhi Leonard, right? Like they can't they can't go into full on rebuild mode while they have themselves thinking that they have a chance at Kawhi, because Kawhi isn't going to want to jump onto a complete rebuild. That's not what he's going to sign up for. So they're going to, and again, it just comes down to recognizing your own shortcomings. Like, yeah, cool, maybe you'd have a chance at Kawhi in any other year because of the weirdness that's going on with his camp, but they don't. Like, and they need to be realistic with themselves and recognize that they don't really have a chance at him. And so long as they continue to think that they do, They're tying one hand behind their backs, and they're going to hurt their own long-term rebuild.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I like you said, you know, this season for the Lakers is as much about next year, like next summer, as it is about this year. They need to show some sort of steady progress to have, you know, draw in another free agent. I feel like this year for the Clippers, they know they can make at least one, if not two, max contract spots. They would love to, like, get, you know, if this Jimmy Butler Kyrie thing, you know, is actually a package and they're like both of those guys really do want to play together, they're going to want to be in on that bidding and like try to get both of those guys. But it does seem like if they blow themselves apart to the point where, you know, there's nothing, they can always just like lose those free agents next summer, and yeah, it would suck that you don't get anything back, but at least if you keep those guys on your roster past the trade deadline, you have a plan B. Whereas like if you strike out on Kawhi and KD and Kyrie, like you're not suddenly left with the bill of like, oh shit, we traded all these guys just to create two max contract spots, and now like Marc Gasol is the best free agent on the market.
Yeah. No, I mean, how much are they going to pay Tobias Harris next year is what I'm wondering. Because that's what's going to happen. They're going to strike out. I think what they I think they were pretty clever in one thing last year when they, even though it was kind of shady, when they convinced Blake to re-sign because they knew they wouldn't. Yeah. They didn't want to lose an asset. They did the same with Lou Williams. So I think the Clippers, unlike the Kings and Suns that we talked about previously, are at least aware that you don't win by losing assets. So looking at they might be going all in on the cap space route, but if they strike out, I do think they have this idea of, well, we can still do something else and then retain some sort of value by flipping these guys later on if we re-sign them.
Right.
But to what end is my question, because at some point, if you're going the free agent route, then you're obviously also wanting to win. Like at some point, you have to make some noise. At some point, you have to go for it. At some point, you have to do something about it that's aggressive, that's going to produce results. The Clippers just has this track record of not really going for that unless they had like CP3 at the point guard position, which is never going to happen again. Like, he's a once-in-a-generation talent. Like, where do you go from here? They're in purgatory.
Well, I think they need to look back on what put themselves in the spot to get CP3 in the first place. And it was they drafted Blake, they drafted DeAndre, they drafted Eric a couple they drafted like the pieces that enabled that all to happen, right? And look, it's the equation is right there on how to succeed in the NBA. And it's actually really cool. This is a really cool era for the NBA, because teams are realizing, oh wait, young guys can actually produce too, and it enables these teams to compete in the immediate and also build for the future at the same time. Like, all of the best teams do this: Boston, Golden State, Houston to a lesser extent, Toronto is doing it, right? And that's in all these teams that aren't recognizing that equation. Like, they're shooting themselves in the foot because they think that it's either win now or it's build for the future, when really you have to do is draft a couple guys who outperform their rookie contract, get to the top of the lottery if possible to give you the best opportunity to get those kinds of guys, and then you continue to build around them. And you continue to build a culture around that situation. And for all of these teams that have identity issues, they seem to think that it's either one or the other when it's really not. And continuing to think that way is really going to hurt them moving forward for years to come.
Yeah, and I think the problem for the Clippers is that while Blake, DeAndre, CP3 were there, they were trading their first-round pick like every other year, like as much as they possibly could. Like, they did not value draft picks properly. It seems like since Jerry West came aboard, now they're starting to realize, you know, even like they had two picks, what, like 12 and 13 this year, but they got, you know, Shea could be interesting. Like,
he's good.
That was a home run swing at whatever pick, you know, late lottery pick. Like, you don't have to get, ideally, you would love a top five, top three, number one pick, because, as you said, Anthony, it gives you just the best chance of getting that type of prospect. But, like, it's sometimes even, I mean, in terms of value, like, those guys get paid more, too. If you hit a home run at 11, 12, 13, like the Suns did with Devin Booker, like the Bucks did with Giannis, like, they are way outperforming their contract. Whereas a number one pick is still making like $8 million. I mean, it's still going to be close to the mid-level exception. You get a lottery pick, it's $2 million. Like, you can't ask for that type of value. So, yeah, I mean, hopefully they will start or, like, continue to pivot in this direction of, like, this is how we actually build a team. It just seems like they don't want to go into, like, a full rebuild yet. Like, I saw a quote from Steve Ballmer where he just said it doesn't send a good message to free agents, but I think that's going to make next summer really interesting for them, because if they do strike out on these top-tier guys, and I keep banging this drum, but I really don't think there are that many guys worth a max deal next summer. Like, there are far fewer guys worth a max deal than there are teams that are going to have max slots or even two max slots. So, like, what happens once KD, Kawhi, Kyrie, Jimmy all decide? I even throw Chris Middleton in that group, but that's just because I love him. But, like, after those five guys, like, I don't know if there's another guy who deserves or who's, like, would be a good investment in a max. And that's, you know, 10-plus teams can make max slots next year.
Right. Right.
There isn't a guy. Well, just the concept of a max deal is kind of a flawed concept, right? Because if you're thinking max, then there's only, like, three or four guys across the league who should be making mm-hmm. that amount of money. And mm-hmm. let alone three or four guys that are all available in the same offseason, right? And so for the Clippers and for a lot of these teams that are going to strike out next year, because some teams are going to, again, you can't convince yourself. You have to convince yourself on, like, think of poor Minnesota with Andrew Wiggins and their owner, like, asking, hey, you promise you're going to work hard? Like, if you have to do those kind of backflips to convince yourself on that, you're in trouble. And I think you're just better off. And it's tough, you know, because you have to get your fan base on board with this too. But more and more fan bases are on board with this. Like, more, if mm-hmm. anything, like, look, for the Clippers, they should look at the Lakers and how the Lakers are a historical franchise that never was really bad. And yet they didn't lose any fans over the last 5 years. Like, if anything, next year is going to be even more magical because they have gone through this crap that they just went through for these last 5 years, right? And mm-hmm. for the Clippers, they could look also at the Lakers and how the Lakers bring fans out to Las Vegas and how that happened because they drafted D'Angelo Russell and then they drafted Julius Randle and then D'Angelo Russell and then Brandon Ingram and then Lonzo Ball, and over that course, like, they were just selling out Thomas and Mack. And for the Clippers, like, they should look at that. They should look at that success and say, oh, fans actually can think long term too. And right. and you know, give their fans a little bit of credit here so that they find themselves better situated for not just 3-4 years from now, but decades from now.
I think a lot of teams have that problem where they look at fans as just extremely unintelligent. Yeah. If we just look at the Bulls real quickly, I mean, they've lost so much fan support over the past 5 years because they're spoken to as they're just morons.
Yeah.
I mean, when you look at that Gar Foreman press conference, like, you might as well have a drinking game for the amount of time. So he's going to insult the intelligence of fans watching. And you know, I think it's a perfect point. You have so many fans right now across the league just clamoring for those teams that are, you know, in the middle. Just go tank already. You know, for teams especially that have some assets, you know, veterans that they can flip for picks or young guys or whatever. Like, some of those deals are right there and they're not being completed because some guy in an office somewhere whose feet is not on the ground goes, well, you know, it's a draw. People like to watch this guy who's the 37th best player in the NBA. That guy's bringing seats or butts in the seats. Yeah, no. A lot of fan bases will actually show up if you start to rebuild and say, you know what, let's break it down and let's just start up again. But this time, let's do it right. I think a lot of fans would just be very appreciative of that.
Yeah, it would suck to get talked down to all the time, right? Like,
right. Yeah.
And the other thing too that teams probably should start taking account for is the coverage of these teams, like the presence mm-hmm. of all the various blogs and the presence of NBA, like the NBA itself has welcomed NBA Twitter. Right, like they, mm-hmm. it's something that they really looked at and they're proud of the creativity that comes with NBA Twitter, and yet there are teams out there who are like, well, no, that's it, and it is the small minority, but more and more fans are being informed by the opinions of some of the guys who sit and girls who sit down and really think this stuff out and really and spend a lot of time on figuring out what the best situation is for their team moving forward, and the presence of these blogs and more journalists are giving their opinion, which is obviously extremely informed, and what that does is it really highlights when teams F up, and what these teams need to realize is there's a huge readership out there who read and follow and listen to these people, mm-hmm. and it's not as easy to just wipe stuff under the rug anymore.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would play devil's advocate for a second because, you know, from the like the Philly perspective, I think is the most famous version of tanking in the last 5 years at least, and like attendance wise, it really did fall during the early part of the process, especially. So for teams that are focused on like the immediate financial return, you do lose money at the start, and if you're concerned about that, then that's, you know, there's no way around that. You can't embrace a full tank. But as we've seen, like the past year especially, and even the, you know, once Ben Simmons came around, like the Sixers have more fan support now, I would say, yep, than they have since the Iverson era.
Yeah, so like, fans are going to stick around. Yeah,
right.
If you put a good product on the floor, fans are going. It's the Field of Dreams thing. If you build it, they will come. If you put a decent product on the court, eventually fans are going to come around. And that's always been. And now, sure, those thin years are a little extra thin, but if you have to sacrifice those few thin years to set yourself up for long term sustainable success, that's a trade off you make every day of the week and a few times over on Sunday.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think more your point about, you know, guard in Chicago just like lying or just talking down to fans. I think that, you know, Hinkie, that's what endeared a lot of Philly people to him. It was just like no bullshit, just like we are going to suck for a couple of years, and like this is we have a long term plan in place. This is what we're going for, and it goes back to what we're talking about with the Suns and the Kings and the Clippers. Like we don't know. The Clippers, I think, probably do have a long-term plan in place just because I have faith in Jerry West. But, like, the Suns and the Kings, I'm not convinced that they have a long-term plan in place. And that's really going to, like, ultimately damage. Like, that's why I don't, you know, Kings fans, I've been saying it for months. Like, you deserve an amnesty. You should be able to choose another team because there's no sign that you're going to, like, pull out of this at any point. Like,
and this goes for Knicks fans as well, by the way.
Yeah, yeah. Like, you have, you know, the Suns and the Knicks both have really talented players in Devin Booker and Kristaps Porzingis. But I have no faith in those organizations pulling out of this just because they have bad ownership, and that bad ownership leads to all these ever-changing long-term plans. And it's, these franchises kill me. I mean, there's a chance that, like, we're talking about the three worst teams in the West right now, in the Suns, the Kings, and the Clippers. And not, like, long-term, but this year, I think these might be the three worst.
And by the way, to your point about Sam Hinkie, are you telling me he didn't say, we want to get younger and more athletic and then go out and sign Rajon Rondo and Dwayne Wade?
No. He just went for Michael Carter Williams.
Yeah. I actually remember the Twitter reaction when Gar said that initially before the signings.
Yeah. Yeah.
People were just celebrating. Like, you know, the Chicago Bulls riots from the 1991 championship were just going on. People were like, yeah, they started to get it. They understand.
Right.
And the Bulls sign Rajon Rondo. Like, oh.
Yeah.
Oh.
And that's what's going to make the Clippers really fascinating over these next 12 months is, like, as Anthony said, do you understand your place right now in the league? Like, do you get that you're not a title contender, and you're most likely not a real contender for any of these max free agents again, unless, like, maybe they've gotten some back channel stuff and say, like, Jimmy and Kyrie both want to come to you, in which case that's going to inform their decision making. But otherwise, are they really just banking on, like, we're in LA and we have $50 million in cap space and it worked for the Lakers, so it'll work for us?
Well, obviously, they wouldn't know whether Jimmy or Kyrie were interested because there's a strict July 1 deadline, Brian. Remember, the Lakers know all about the that one.
Yeah, they could just ask Magic Johnson.
Yeah,
but Magic is just sitting. You used the Lakers as the example of, like, things just kind of working out. That's a lot of what happened, right? Like, the Lakers happened to have cap space, and now, fortunately, like, LeBron the reason LeBron wanted to come to the Lakers wasn't basketball specific. It was that he knew that the Lakers brand would kind of help lead, you know,
boost his pole profile.
Vault him into vault him into like the next stratosphere of the business acumen that he wanted to kind of succeed with. And and so like if the Clippers are looking at the Clippers don't have that kind of brand appeal. Right. They don't have that market appeal. So if they're saying, see, look, it worked for the Lakers, well, the Lakers have 16 rings. Like the Lakers have actual banners that they can hang up there. They don't have selfies that they put up on the side of their building. That's not. And so, like, again, it's just understanding what you are or are not capable of. For example, me, I make a living speaking, and I just forgot how to say the word vault. I should probably rethink a few things.
You're saying the Clippers don't have a banner of Blake Griffin winning the dunk contest?
No. They may as well try to take ownership of Taylor Swift's banner that she has up on stage.
Yeah, that's true. It probably no room in the Lakers, so they might as well. Yeah. Well, guys, this was a lot of fun. I think we covered some good territory here. Anthony, again, thank you for joining us. Remind people where they can find your work and where they can find you on Twitter.
I'm at Anthony Irwin LA. You can find Locked On Lakers everywhere that you find podcasts. You can follow Silver Screen and Roll. It's at Lakers SBN. That's where I do all my writing. Shouts to Harrison, who puts up with my crap on a daily basis to let me continue to write there. But yeah, it's all fun stuff. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, we're happy to have you on. We're not happy that the Lakers are relevant this year, but congratulations again. We'll suffer through you guys on Twitter for 9 months like we have with the Warriors the last 4 years.
That reminds me, I have to go out and buy an extra large Lakers rings shirt.
Oh, God.
Well, I was there many years ago. I'm at the 3 to 4 XL part. So when I heard you're like, oh, I can't wear large anymore, I was like, dude, I wish I had that problem. Yeah.
My bad.
Well, in the meantime, everyone, please follow us on Twitter at the NBA Pod. You can find our Twitter handles in our bio. You can also find us on iTunes. So please subscribe, download, leave some 5-star reviews. We'd love any feedback. And we're being hosted on the Almighty Baller Podcast Network. So check them out on Twitter at Almighty Casts. Until next time, I'm Brian Toporek, and I was joined by Morten Jensen and Anthony Irwin. Have a good one, guys.
You too, Brian.
Have a good one.